Hello and welcome to episode 109 of Gutter to Gutter podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Erin Burns. Erin is a drifter from Western Sydney who has grown up around a racetrack with her family's roots deep into drag racing. In this episode, we get to hear about how Erin spent her time growing up at the drag strip with her father being crew chief for John Boscovich for quite some time before his unfortunate accident at Calder Park. We got to hear about Erin's unlikely change of direction and how she found her way to drifting and S-chassis, and also what her entry into drift looked like. We also get to touch on Erin's position as a judge for the High Tech Drift All-Stars series and how she has adapted to that role coming from the driver's point of view. It was really cool to sit with Erin to learn about her story and her passion for motorsport. With that being said, I hope you all enjoy this episode with Erin Burns on Gutter to Gutter podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gutter to Gutter podcast. I am Static and joined with me in this episode is Erin Burns. Erin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Very good. Busy week for you or not? Not yet. Not so much yet.
Not yet. Give it a couple of days and
give it to the end of the week, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. Early days.
Awesome. Yeah. So what we normally do in each episode is we start off with, I guess, in your words, who you are and what you do.
Okay. My name is Erin. I guess I'm a drifter. It's been a while, but I guess I still identify as a drifter. I've been around the drifting clubs in Sydney for about a decade or so. Before that, I came from a drag racing family who's still very involved in drag racing. I'm a mum is another thing. It's a very big part of my life. And I'm a teacher, I guess, is the wrap up.
Awesome. So school's just gone back today. Essentially the kids have just come back today.
Yeah.
So they've gone easy on you today.
Yeah. The calm before the storm.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So I guess drag racing in your background, sort of when did that, has that been your whole life? Has that been a thing your whole life?
That has literally been my whole life. I have spent a lot of my childhood growing up at the track. Dad was a crew chief for John Boscovich in the Wild Bunch class with a 57 Chev. So many, many nights and days we'd spent in the sheds at Eastern Creek running amok probably. Pretty much were there, and then unfortunately John had an accident in 95 at Calder, which kind of put a bit of an end to that kind of scenario. But both of his sons and granddaughters and grandsons have all gone into the drag racing realm. So my parents are still very much involved and they head up there. We've got a lot of good friends like Benny Gatt, who's quite well known in the drag racing scene, I guess. So that's my roots of motorsport.
Awesome. So how do you go from drags to drifting, I guess?
Much to my father's dismay. I did a couple of circuit days. I had a 32 back then. And then they had some split days between circuit and drift days where I actually got to see a bit of the drifting and mainly Japanese import cars, which were my personal preference. So saw what they were doing and seemed like a pretty good challenge. And I liked the spectacle of it. I liked the atmosphere that it had. So I started. And in amongst that, I'd met my ex-husband, Adam, who's very much entrenched in drifting and was a part of the initial Drift Club Australia. I just jumped straight in, I guess.
Awesome. So from, I guess, running around the pits as a young child, I guess, coming up through your teens and then into drifting, They're two completely different worlds. So that's really cool.
They are. The communities, I'd say, have some similarities for sure, but very different outlook on things. I feel like drag racing, to be very general, it's a lot more of the engineering of the car, whereas I feel like drifting, there's a lot more focus on driver skill and technique than if I had to be very general to separate the two.
Yeah.
And I feel like drifting is still a very young motorsport in comparison as well. So for drag racing is very family orientated these days. And for myself, I grew up there. Whereas drifting, feel like it's still coming into its own, and we'll probably have a similar vibe later on. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at all the issues we're kind of facing at the moment, which are looking a lot better, you know. I mean, I suppose we've probably spoken a lot about it on this podcast, and it seems like we put more of a doom and gloom sort of emphasis on it, but it's looking pretty good at the moment, especially with, like, you know, the likes of Australian Drift Club and everything they're doing at the moment. It's looking pretty good. So hopefully we just continue onward and upward from here.
Yeah, there were definitely some dark days there for a little bit where we had nothing in Sydney specifically. Wakefield, especially for Initial Drift Australia, that was our home track. So when that went down, pretty much the club couldn't keep running after that. There was just nowhere to go. So
yeah, and that's sad. So Initial Drift is still sort of around, is it?
The name still exists, but functioning-wise, Pete was still in charge of Initial Drift Australia, but life just gets in the way. Like, there comes a point where you can't bankroll it anymore, and you've got to start looking at some other goals in life, and that's pretty much where it ended.
Yeah, that's fair enough. All right. If we rewind and go back to you as a child, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Blacktown in the western suburbs of Sydney. Doesn't really get a good rap, but I had a good upbringing. So I feel like I turned out somewhat okay. So
that's right. Fellow Westie.
That could be debatable, but yeah, so it's pretty much where I've been my whole life in the western suburbs. So
awesome. Have you got like a favorite childhood memory sort of growing up around Blacktown, and I guess even around the pits of drag racing? And
100%. When I was a kid, drag racing, they used to run triple challenges, and they would have all the different forms of motorsport, and it would just be the massive event. They'd have fireworks, and it was crazy. They'd bring over some of the drivers from the US, and I remember meeting a daughter of one of the American drivers, and we became friends, and we just ran around the track. And also something they used to have was State of Origin at Eastern Creek with drag racing, so the Queensland versus the New South Wales drivers. And one particular memory is they would have somebody dressed up in a cane toe costume, someone dressed up in a cockroach costume, and they'd be on these little postie bikes just gunning it down the quarter mile. it was fun. It was really fun those days. So
that's really cool. Does drag racing sort of stack up today like it against what it used to be back in the, probably, I'd want to say, I know the peak, or what I thought was the peak, was probably late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, it'd be the late 90s, I feel like, was definitely the peak for myself and my family, early to late 90s. I'm probably not around the drag racing scene so much other than what I hear through my family and things like that, so I can't really compare to what it was like back then. But I guess things are a lot stricter now just in motorsport in general, so there's a lot of things have evolved, and I guess that impacts on how seriously people take it and how much they can invest in the sport as well.
Yeah, so for sure. I guess, like, safety being the key feature that's been improved upon throughout that whole time. Which is great, because you don't lose as many drag racers now, like racers, not racers.
Yeah. So there's still been some incidences over the years, and there've been a few recently, but it's still a dangerous sport.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, we all jump in. We know the risks. Nobody wants those things to come to fruition, but unfortunately, sometimes they do.
Absolutely.
So, We just have to be well aware.
For sure.
Of what can happen.
Yep. So were you a sporty kid at all?
No.
No? Not at all?
No, I was never much into the physical side of sports. I did dancing as a kid, but that was probably as sporty as I got.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so where did your love of cars come from? Obviously hanging around the pits. It's got to be.
Yeah. I'd say my dad.
Yeah.
100% my dad. So dad would be constantly building different things. He had Transams. He had a Cortina, like just lots of different things growing up. And he also built his own drag car. He had a Telstar. And I just remember as a kid, dad building it. And we'd be climbing around in the roll cage and just, I don't know, always in the garage, I guess.
Yeah.
So definitely dad.
So Telstar drag car, did I hear that right?
Yeah. That's different. Doesn't sound much, but it did look the part. It really did. Dad finally got it done. Unfortunately, after John's accident, which was in about 97, I think dad took it out for his first pass down at Canberra when they used to run near the airport there. Yeah, I think it was a 6 second pass, but they're not I think they're an eighth of a mile. Back then they weren't a quarter mile, but yeah, it was good to see dad finally enjoy all the years of building
his absolutely cars. It's funny, like we spend so long building them and not as long driving them. Like I have a ute that I've drifted twice, and I've spent, I think we're going on 3 years building it now. So
I think there is also the type of people that just love the process of building, and there's the people that just want to get in, drive, doesn't matter what it is, whereas some people are a lot more pedantic about what goes together, how it goes together,
yeah,
and their vision, I guess.
And I've said that as well. You know, like for me it's the doing of the thing rather than going to or the building of it rather than the doing of it, I should say.
Yeah, so I definitely am not so much the builder. I prefer to just drive.
Yep.
That was my happy space. But having said that, I'm not very technically minded, so it's a bigger challenge for me to get behind the building side. Yep.
Absolutely. So with all of that going on around you, where did Japanese cars creep in?
Honestly, I don't know. My brother had bought a 14 when we were younger, and I think it just kind of started from there. I was like, oh, I like this. And then it was also around auto salon days when it was really.
Yep.
So I guess the whole sex spec thing, I kind of took a liking to the cars, not necessarily the style, but the cars I really liked. And then finally decided to buy my first import, which was a 32. It was a non-turbo because it was cheaper, which we ended up putting a RB26 into anyway. But yeah, then from there it's pretty much been either R chassis or Sylvia constantly. So
awesome. That's cool.
There's something about their style. I've just always loved the shape.
Many Toyota fans would disagree, but they're undeniable. There's just something about them.
Yeah, 100%. I've got a soft spot for them and always will, I think. Yeah,
absolutely. Did you have a dream car sort of amongst all of that time?
I always wanted a 15, which funnily now I've been through four, but that was pretty much what I wanted back then. I think I got my first one when I was about maybe 23 or something like that, and it was just all I wanted. Was one. They just looked the part in stock form and didn't need a lot to make them look good. Mind you, I love 13s, love 14s, but I just feel like the 15's just a bit of base to start.
Yeah.
So that was probably what I really wanted back then.
Absolutely. I remember when they were released, the noise around them was unreal. You know, everybody wanted one.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who he ended up in the family business of real estate, and they just had really nice cars. So obviously they were doing pretty well, evidently. But I remember he just bought an S15, and his mother had just bought an S2000. So they were doing it tough, but those two cars were unreal.
Yeah, I remember when they were still early days, and I was at uni, and one of my lecturers, he was an older bloke, and he had to be 50s or 60s, and he had one, and I went, oh, I could do with one of those. So, and I was driving my 32 to uni, and it was not sad, but it wasn't quite the same as the 15.
Yeah, there's a few years between them.
Yeah, it was much older. And I guess in the car park at uni, it kind of stood out like a bit of a sore thumb as
absolutely.
Well. Most of them had Barinas and Lancers and things like that. So they heard me coming to the car park.
That's good.
I wouldn't have it any other way, but it was always been a bit on the different side of things.
Yep. So you've had four S15s?
In total, yeah, four. So unfortunately two were written off. One was hit from the back and they just decided it was an economic write-off back then. And the other one was in a big accident. So ended up going into three oncoming cars and then onto a embankment. It ripped the suspension out. Don't even know where one of the wheels ended up. The bonnet just shattered. It was a big accident. So, yeah. And then the other ones, one we just bought and just to do up and sell to flip. And then there's the one that I've got now.
Awesome. So I guess tell us a bit of the story of that one.
The one that I've got now?
Yeah.
So bought that just pre-COVID. So before COVID tax hit, it was sitting in a paddock somewhere in Newcastle, I think. We ended up getting it really cheap. Did have a front ender. I think the guy's missus had T-boned somebody and it had just been sitting there for years. So building stuff as we do, we decided to get it and got the rails all straightened up properly and just, you know, changed all the radiator support or did all that kind of stuff and, yeah, got it track ready.
Awesome. So is that what it is now? It's a track car?
Yeah, it's track. Yeah. It can be registered.
Yep.
Funnily enough, it's not on the PBSR register, but I don't have any plans to register it anytime soon, but the potential's there.
Yeah, that's good if it ever does come time to sell it. Would there be a time that you'd sell it?
If I couldn't keep a roof over my head, would be the ultimately.
That is the best answer.
Unless there was some dire family emergency or something like that, that would be the only time I'd part with it. Just full knowing how much I love Sylvia's, and if I let this one go, I'll probably never get one again.
Yeah.
So I'm a realist.
Yep. So I guess you probably had this at the same time, but before I guess getting into that, you had an S14 as well?
Yes, I have owned two.
Yep.
One was purchased after the first Japan trip just because I wanted a streeter, wanted something that we didn't care too much about, just to have a bit of fun in. Didn't have that one too long, and then the guy that we'd bought it off wanted to buy it back for more money. So it was a bit of a no-brainer at the time. And then the other S14 was bought, I think, just before the next Japan trip, and that was supposed to be a track car, but it just turned out way too mint to see a track, even though it has now. But yeah, there were plans just for it to be a track car, but it came out really good quality, so I just couldn't bear the thought of it.
So there's a bit of a history behind that car, is that correct?
It was Chia from Powertune. It was the Red Dragon, which has a bit of an infamous reputation. It had been sitting for quite a few years in his shed, and he just wanted to see something come of it, I guess. So it had no running gear. It was just the shell. So pretty much my previous, the S13 drift car, that running gear went into it.
Yep.
So.
Nice. And I know that there was a bit of animosity, I guess we could call it. Was that more so YouTube or just social media animosity around that car because you changed it?
What had happened was I like to keep a bit of a video diary of when we build cars. So I'd put together, I think it was through COVID actually, so it was much later after the fact that it had finished, and I'd put together the video and I'd uploaded it. And then some young guns on one of the S15 pages thought they'd have a go, pretty much saying that it, how some blonde chick came along and ruined it was the was the go. And things like that don't really faze me. Couldn't give a shit what you think. We built it because that's what we wanted. Like, not everybody has the same style. I get it. Your car, you do you. So it didn't really faze me, but I just don't like that that embedded toxicity in social media, that you don't know me, you don't know anything about me, yet you want to be an asshole, basically. Yeah. So I did, actually, I didn't find the post myself. I had some friends who were also on the S15 page who had forwarded it to me. So I shared it and I thought, you know what, stuff you, this is what people think. So I shared it, said my little piece, and I left it. Ended up being, I think a few people might've given them a little bit of flack because I didn't blur out names or anything. I figure if you're going to put something up, you stand behind your words. So, I'm assuming they had a little bit of an influx, and one of them actually reached out to apologize. He took it down, said he's really sorry, like he doesn't believe in bullying, and he seemed genuinely remorseful. I said, look, that's fine. Like, I accept that you've taken accountability, but just take it as a teaching moment. Don't do that to people. Like, you don't know somebody's, especially with mental health. Like, mental health is such a big thing. You don't know where somebody's at, and that could be the tipping point. So I just... Yeah, and then that was it. Moved on from that.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I guess the point I was trying to get at there is, like, you bought that car because there was nothing happening with it. You built it up to a stage where it was too mint to put on the track. So how anyone can think that's a bad thing, I don't know. But
I think it's like young people just, well, not young people, but I guess some people necessarily that might be new to the scene as well, people get really sucked into, I guess, other levels of how good they think something else is, and they don't really take the blinders off. They only look at one thing. There's so many different ways people can create. Like, it's not, I don't know, it's not for me. I'm not a very judgmental person, so I don't understand it myself, but
yeah.
Yeah, I just, if I see somebody picking on someone, I don't really like it. But the fact that it was targeted at me, I thought, you know what? I'll give you a piece of my mind.
That's good. Yeah. And ultimately, Chia loved that car, yeah?
Yeah. It might not have necessarily been his taste. He's got his own style of things, which is fine. But he knew what we were doing to it. He knew it was going to be wide-bodied. We pretty much wide-bodied everything, and it needed some work. Like, it's not that it came off the track as a pristine drag car or anything like that. It'd been used. Like, it just, I think people have just seen the old videos of it in its glory days and assumed that that was what still stood.
Yeah.
So, but awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. Take us back to your first car. What was the first car you ever owned?
My very first car was a Mitsubishi Galant, and not the good one. It was like the Povo Pack version. All I wanted was a Suzuki, you know, the little hatchback. I think it was Swift still then.
Yeah.
The little hatchback ones. And Dad's like, no, you're going to get a Mitsubishi. I don't know why he chose it, but he said that that's what I was getting. And he was paying for it, so you don't argue.
Awesome. So he paid for it?
He paid for my first car. He actually paid for it twice, because, which is a bit of a running family joke. So he bought it for me, and then a couple of years later I wanted to buy my first import and I wanted to sell it to be able to buy my first car. And Dad goes, it's too good of a car. It's a runaround car. I'll buy it off you. Dad, you already bought it. So he bought it off me.
So you
so very expensive Galant.
You scored twice out of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so he gave me the money so that I could go and buy my first 32.
Awesome. That's so good.
Yeah.
What was the first modification you did to that Galant?
Oh, God, I really didn't do much to it. I think it's embarrassing to admit, but I think I bought hubcaps. because that's all I could afford.
Yeah. So is that like the chrome dress room sort of deal?
Yeah, they were. They were hectic.
straight to Autobahn.
Yeah, straight to Autobahn. And I think I bought, like floor mats, like just shit. You know what I mean? Like yeah. It was literally, I was working at Big W at the time. That is all I could afford.
That is awesome. That's so good.
Yeah.
I'm always hoping, when I ask that question, I'm always hoping for a twist and tape stereo job.
Well, my brother installed the stereo in it for me, and he was very much the type that would have it rattling so that you could hear him coming. So he did me a favour, so I'm not going to complain. but, yeah, it was a neat little car. It did its job as a first car.
That's awesome. And then straight from that to an R32.
Yeah, and I hadn't learned manual yet at that point either. So when I bought the 32, I had to learn manual real quick on the M4 on the way to uni every day in peak hour traffic.
That'll do it. So you said that was a non-turbo.
Yes.
What motors were in those? Were they still an RB20?
Yes.
Okay.
And I could not get rid of that for the life of me. We ended up taking it to the tip.
The RB20?
Yep.
Wow.
Box and all. Unreal. It all went to the tip because it sat under Dad's house for about 3 years and he said, get rid of it.
That's unreal, and nobody would take it.
No, they were just a very exaggerated paperweight back then. So, yeah.
Wow.
And we came across a 26 pretty cheap. So I think I paid about $3,500 for that with the box.
That's crazy. That's such crazy numbers.
Yeah, so I've still got the receipt for it. I remember the guy's name was Pierre. Could have been a Dodge, I don't know. But, it was just the time, and I was putting myself through uni, so it was a bit of a drawn-out build.
Yep. That's cool. I like that you can't get rid of an RB20. Now you'd have no problem now.
Yeah. I spent, back then it was forums, so I'd put it up on the forums, Nissan Silvia and Skylines Australia and things like that. Yeah, no takers.
That sucks. How good were forums?
Honestly, they were I would get home from work, that would be the first thing I would jump onto. It was awesome. There was a lot of crappy banter, but it's probably got nothing in comparison to the keyboard warriors these days.
No, that's right, because everybody came together on there, and there was a bit of accountability too, you know, like there was a chance that you'd probably meet some of these people.
Yeah, it was very community-based. People would go on weekly, monthly cruises, and people got to know each other.
Yeah.
So, and people were respected for what they did and the information they shared. And we're still, if you have a look, if you're troubleshooting a problem, guaranteed you get an old forum pop up somewhere and someone's put the article thread in there. They're still going strong somewhere.
Yeah. I get it all the time. You Google something that's so specific, especially you know, when you're trying to build a Nissan Navara as a drift ute, you're Googling something so specific and it takes you to a forum from 2012.
Yep. Yeah,
like that's when they stopped existing in 2012. They just disappeared after that.
Yeah, and then Facebook hit, and they pretty much died.
Facebook killed forums. Damn you, Zuckerberg.
Should write him an email.
Write them a nasty letter. So, I guess the list of cars that you've owned, what does that look like?
I did write one not that recently because someone had asked me. And I actually think I may have forgotten a few off there, but it got to about 16 thereabouts. I'd probably say a good 12 of those have been Sylvia's.
Wow.
There's been a few random ones here and there. Like I had a Lexus IS200 for a little bit. I thought after one of my cars was written off, yeah, you know what, I'll see how I go without an import. Had it for 6 months and I went, nah, can't do it. It was an absolute nugget. I ended up putting it up on the forum and doing a straight swap for an S15. So
straight swap for an S15.
Straight swap. Yep.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I remember the guy's name was Pashka. the funny thing to remember.
Absolutely. So I guess out of that whole list, what's your favourite car?
I'd say my favourite car, I have favourite ones for different reasons. My first 32 was one of my biggest kind of introductions of imports as a whole. So there were just things that I learned with that car that you learn with your first import. When you realise the wiring's a bit old and shit and like some things are just not quite like the family cars you're used to driving. So that was, but that was my first like important car. So I feel like that set the trend for everything. The other big one I'd say that's a big important one for me would be the wide body footing, because that would be my biggest learning journey where I did a lot of the work, not unsupervised, but I gave things a lot more of a go than what I'd given in the past. So I actually did the wide body, obviously with Adam's help, but, you know, I cut the guards, I welded underneath. So, yeah, just a lot of learning with that car.
That's awesome.
So that's my favourite.
That's awesome you get to build something like that and have that connection with it.
Yeah, it's even seeing it now. Like I'm really happy that the guy that bought it has a genuine love for what it is and he wants to use it to its full potential. It was built to be a track car. Like it's got a full cage and everything, but I was too scared to ruin the creation, I guess, where he doesn't have that history with it, so it's a lot easier for him to take it out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's great to see it at the end of the journey, but I am by far not a very patient person throughout the journey. yeah. So.
Awesome. Have you got any pet peeves while driving on the road?
Yeah, people that stick in the right-hand lane is probably my biggest one.
Yep.
Move the fuck over. I don't know if I can swear.
Yeah, you can. It's fine.
I swear what, like a sailor, so what, I'm like,
we're
really
all thinking it.
but yeah, I'd say people that sit in the right-hand lane really bugs me, and people who want to sit right under the speed limit. So there's one road near me, Mamre Road, you'd know it. One lane either way, and there's always someone going 20 under, and you just want to ram them, basically. So yeah, they're probably my big two.
Can relate. Well, I think my biggest one is when you're turning into like a two lane road. Like let's say we're on an off ramp from the freeway, turning on left onto a two lane road, and everybody that's coming the other way wants to stick in the left hand lane. When there's nobody in the right-hand lane. They could just easily move over into that lane and let you out, but no.
Yeah. Assholes. I don't know how half these people got their licenses. Yeah,
just oblivious to the fact that anyone else is on the road.
Yeah. I get, I won't say road rage, but I can get pissed pretty easy.
I get road rage bad.
Yes. That could be a Sydney thing too, so.
Yeah, Westies for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. What do you do in your spare time when you're not playing with cars?
When I'm not on mum duties or with the cars, I do pole dancing as well. So I've actually taken a little bit of a break at the moment because I feel like my body just needs a bit of downtime. But, yeah, I'd say pole's probably my next big love after drifting. I've been doing that for a few years. So I'd say they're probably my main two addictions. I have lots of little things that I like to get in amongst just because I can't focus for very long, so I tend to chop and change between a lot of different things.
I can relate. As I point behind me.
Yeah, I feel like that's a drifter's, like a prerequisite to be a drifter as well. So, but, yeah, I'd say pole.
Yep. So how long have you been doing that for now?
Seven years, I guess. On and off. I took a bit of a break here and there, obviously, when I had my baby, and a couple of other times I've taken a little bit of a hiatus. So on and off for 7 years, but overall, yeah.
Unreal. Is that something that's fairly tough on your body, I imagine?
Yeah, it is. When you first start, obviously they build you up slowly. They're not going to throw you in the deep end because, one, it's just not safe, but two, unless you've got a gymnastic kind of history, you probably just won't be able to do it. So it's gradual strength and flexibility over time. And I think, too, because I'm getting older, sometimes I think I can still do what I always did and bounce back as quick, but unfortunately I can't. So I've just got to do some maintenance, whether it's to see a physio or an osteo, and stay on top of it. There's a lot of core strength, and sometimes when you forget to engage that core properly, it kind of refers elsewhere.
Yep, you pay the price.
That's it.
Yeah, I was doing jiu-jitsu a while back, and it's not that it's really taxing. I mean, it's much the same sort of thing, you know, like you gradually builds up your core strength, especially. But I went back, was it the start of this year or the end of last year? Somewhere, something like that. And it's not what I remember, that's for sure. My body does not do what I want it to anymore. So,
yeah, people say, oh, even after I had my son, oh, muscle memory, you'll be fine. My memory's not the best, let alone my muscle memory, but it does kind of kick in to a degree. But, yeah. Things are definitely a lot harder as you get older.
Absolutely, absolutely. What kind of music do you get into?
I am an old-school R&B girl. So give me your old-school R&B, preferably 90s, and I'm down.
Who was the go-to group in the 90s for you?
In the 90s, TLC would have been my go-to. But even, like, I've always loved Usher, and my brother used to listen to Wu-Tang a lot, even though it's probably a bit older than me. But, yeah, so a lot of those, I guess the lovey-dovey songs were always
the ones. Yeah. I've actually been listening, because I don't know, I've been a metalhead mainly, but I've always enjoyed like that new metal. So it's always been, there's always been the hints of like that hip hop influence in there anyway.
Yeah.
Hip hop and rap. And I've found myself lately enjoying Wu-Tang, where I never did.
Yeah. I find that even with a lot of the new music, they just sample a lot of the old music, and it just, that nostalgia kind of kicks in a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a lot of them are still around, like Dre. Like you hear Dre being played all the time on the radio. He used to crank that shit at the club, like when I was younger.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you have any superstitions?
Well, not necessarily myself. My mum had a bit of a superstition with the black S15s. All of the S15s I've had have been black, and two were written off, and mum was beside herself thinking things come in threes and you've got the same one, it's going to happen again, and she was not relieved until I sold it and then kind of horrified that I bought another one. But, yeah, so she's a little bit superstitious. I wouldn't say that I necessarily am superstitious in any way. I probably have quirks, if anything.
do we get into those, or do we leave them alone?
Honestly, I'm an open book, but it's my memory that fails me. So there's just little weird things that I probably do, and I don't even notice that I do them till someone goes, "What'd you do that for?" So yeah.
Yep. I completely relate with the memory.
Yeah, again, as you get older, it gets worse.
And all I can say is I hit my head a lot when I was a kid. That's my only defense.
I felt like I did have a good memory, and then after having my son, they say mum brain, it's fuck for me. Like, it's just nothing retains.
The baby brain is real. It's a
thing.
And
it just never went.
It just hangs around. Unreal. So we'll talk about, I guess, more drift. So when was it, like, I guess, around what time was it you got into drifting?
I was first, I guess, exposed to drifting in about 2010. I did my first track day, I believe, so either end of 2011 or start of 2012, around there at Wakefield Park. So awesome. Straight out on the big track.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of missed, I didn't do wet pan or any kind of fundamental type work, which I feel like crucified me a little bit. But yeah, I just got straight out there.
Was that as big an option back then, the like wet pan stuff?
Not really, no. They did have wet pan, but to be honest, I found wet pan probably more intimidating. I preferred the big open track. I liked the runoff. I liked the space that you could have. And I found most drivers, not all, but most were very understanding and they were cautious. They knew who was advanced, intermediate, beginner and who to space from. Yeah. And back then with initial drift, they had classes as well, which made it a lot more comforting.
Yep. So with the classes, I guess, did they sort of send like each one out at a time?
Yeah, yeah. So I think they might have been 20-minute sessions thereabouts, and they would just call over the PA for the next one and we'd just keep rotating. Then usually after lunch was a bit of an open session.
Yep. So if you felt you could hang, you went.
Yeah, and by that point in the day, most people either, one, got their bearings back again, or two, even if you were still learning, most people kind of worked out who was who on the track. So it always seemed to work pretty fluidly.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Was street drifting everything for you?
No. I had my experiences of going and watching some street drifting with some friends back in the national park back in the day. I myself, too much of a scaredy cat. Like I just, the worst case scenario things always run through my mind. And even though I've tried a few roundabouts and different things here and there just to test some things, I guess, as the most legitimate way I can explain it. but I've never, like, I understand why people have done it. My worst fear is that an animal would come out and I'd hit it. And I don't, again, stupid quirk. Like, I just think those things that other people don't think of. So, and that would just stop me altogether. We have, in like younger days, back when they said the street runs, used to go out to the runs a lot, like when they were over near Bankstown Airport, when they were down like Holbeck Road and things like that, which obviously are no more. But yeah, spent a few years doing that many Saturday nights in my late teens. And it was just a different vibe back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really different vibe.
Was it the same sort of deal as the old like street drag scene where you'd sort of meet up? We used to meet up at like Krispy Kreme's at near Liverpool.
Yeah.
And then the message would go out and everybody's in their car and they're off.
Yeah.
And it'd be like one of three or four places. So it was never hard to find.
No, they were the go-to places. So if it wasn't happening here, you'd go to the other one or you'd go over Milpera or wherever it was. And then you would just go for gold. Then obviously the enforcement would appear and there was time to go.
Yeah. Have you got any stories from those kind of nights? Any close calls?
I've never seen close calls. I think if anything, it was just they were funny nights. Like people were just out to have a good time. There was never anyone I would say too overly serious. Like people still wanted to prove that they had something better than something else. Big, you know, wank contest, but it was still very fun. Like people would be mucking around. I remember once my brother just got out and he's like, no one's doing anything. And he just got the cars. You line up. He had no pants on, mind you. Like this was just the things that happened. And he lined them up and off they went. And I remember once at Long Street, they were doing some drags up there. And then just some guy out of a random factory just brought this go-kart out, started ripping hellies and then just disappeared. Like it was just so random but so fun. Like it just, all these, and there's probably a million more that I can't remember, but it's just definitely different vibes.
I've got one. I don't know if I've told it on the podcast, but there was, it was along Davies Road, Everyone was lined up for drags, and this is, you know, like this is where it's a two lane road, one lane either way, and then you've got a shoulder where cars park, and this whole road is just lined with cars, and people are standing on the road, outside of their cars, sort of thing, as cars are racing past them. But one night, everybody, you know, the call came out and everybody's just running for cars. I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. Yeah. So, we're sort of running along to my friend's car who we went there with. And as we're running along, someone else is running next to me. He goes, oh, mate, do you need a lift? I said, no, I've got a lift over there. And as I've turned a point, that car's driving off. I missed that one. I said, oh, hang on, mate. I've turned back and he's gone. All of a sudden, I'm there by myself. I'm like, oh, this isn't good. I've never seen a street clear so quickly. And I was like, oh, this is not good at all. So there was like a little takeaway shop on the corner and they had this little bush hedge sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm down hiding behind that as cops are driving past. Like, this is so obvious. If they were to just get out of their car, they'd find me so easy. So they sort of drove off and then I ran across a road and there was a furniture shop. And it had one of those really big skip bins just full of timber. So I'm like, I'll hide in here. That's a better place. It was not. So, going from hiding place to hiding places, red and blue flashing lights, I was screaming up and down the road. I'm like, oh, this sucks.
I think that's why the Fast and Furious, the initial movie, related so well at that particular era because we related to it. People really would just get in their cars and leg it and the streets were lined. Like, it's just, I feel like that movie will stick with a lot of us purely because that was our teen years or that was our early 20s.
It was the perfect time.
Yeah. I remember going to watch that at Auburn Cinemas and everybody thought that they were hectic as leaving that car park that night.
I bet it would have looked like leaving a street meet.
It was, those were the days.
Absolutely. And the worst part, you know, like along Davies Road, there is two roads in, two roads out. Like that's it. Like it's the worst spot. I don't know what people were thinking.
Even when they used to do Limb Parade, and it was so close to a main road.
Yeah.
And I think there was a big accident there, and then that's what kind of cooled it off for a few years, to my knowledge, anyway.
Yep. So with that, have you had like a favorite? What's your favorite car movie? Is it Fast and Furious?
Yeah, I'd say Fast and Furious is my number one. Gone in 60 Seconds was all right, but I feel like Fast and Furious was much more relatable on a whole different level. Like just the import, the street scene, like it was just very, very my thing.
Yeah. At what point do you think they should have stopped those movies?
After Tokyo Drift.
Thank you.
100%. That should have been the last one.
Yep.
Absolutely. Like I watched I don't even know which one it was, number 5 or number 7, obviously because Paul Walker had left.
I think it was 7,
I'd watch that one purely for, I guess, sentiment. But, I feel like the actual creation should have stopped after 3.
Yeah. My wife still cannot get through number 7.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay.
She still can't get through it.
Yeah, it's that last scene. And I remember I was actually at Wakefield Park at a drift day and one of the other boys, because I used to love Paul Walker as an obvious crush, I guess, for me. And he said, did you hear the news? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, Paul Walker died. And I thought he was just messing with me because he knew. And I was gutted. I know he has a bit of a controversial, like people are very opinionated about some different things about him, but I've always thought he was a hottie and into cars and that was all I needed.
It doesn't take much to connect it, does it?
Yeah, no. So I was devastated. Really was.
Unreal. I guess through drifting and all of that sort of stuff, who's been your biggest supporter?
I would say by far was Adam. He would have been my biggest supporter. He pretty much did everything he could to get me out on track, to try and teach me things, even though it didn't stay in my head, but he did the utmost he could to pave the way in basically what he just learned how to do from doing it. A lot of things he wasn't shown, he just had to do it, because when you don't have the silver platter you've got to do it yourself. So he learned a lot of things and tried to pass those on to me, probably not as successfully as he hoped. But yeah, and then even when it came to doing comp, we sacrificed a bit financially just so that I could do that. So I'd say by far it would be Adam.
Yeah. What have you done comp-wise?
Comp-wise, I've done the high-tech All-Stars, the amateur class, which I think was 2017. And then just overseas, I did the G1 GP on my second Japan trip. And that's it.
How did they go for you?
The G1 GP?
Yeah.
I just love Japan. I love the drifting over there. It's awesome. Things are not necessarily laid back, but it's just a different approach altogether. Everyone's just out there. There's no my dick's bigger than yours. It's just everybody's there to do their best kind of thing. I kind of just did it because why not? I'm there. I didn't actually think I had a chance by throwing my hat in the ring kind of thing. But it was good. It was on Nishi Long. And I spent the day before just practicing because I could not link it. Like I was just having some difficulties. And then finally at the end of the day, I did. So I was able to actually link it when I went into qualifying. And then I had two battles, I think. So the first battle, I won, but purely I think because I went into a shit line and he tried to follow me and he spun. So, I kind of not blame myself, but I don't feel like I outdrove him, so to speak. And then after that, the next battle, can't even remember who it was, but they knocked me out. I think I might have spun on the next one, so from memory.
Awesome. So I guess for that one, how long did you spend over there driving?
The first trip in 2016, we went over for a month, but we drove for about 10 days, I think. We were at Ebisu, and then the second trip, we were just there for the Matsuri week or Drift Heaven week, whatever they package it as, yeah. But, yeah, so the first trip as well, we were sharing, Adam and I were sharing a car, so we had to kind of break up the driving, whereas on the second trip I purely drove our car and he used EG's car. So
nice. So yeah. you had a car there?
Yes.
Yep.
Still do.
Still do?
Still do,
so yes. how does that work?
So it just stays in storage. They've got several storage areas on the precinct, and you just pay the storage when you go there. So it racks up storage monthly, and then when you want to pull the car out next, you just pay the storage bill.
Right. Well, I'm scared to ask, what's that number up to now?
I actually paid it recently.
Okay.
It was a couple of grand. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Is it affordable though?
I guess it all depends on your budget to what's affordable.
On what's affordable to someone else, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, even drifting budget in general, budgeting speak, I guess, there's certain things you'll sacrifice just so that you could do that. And, yeah, it was just something that was on our bucket list. And I don't think, unless you were going on regular trips, it's probably not worth it. But the guys that we have gone with, they go annually. So for them, and the amount of driving that you can get in a week is not comparable anywhere else in, like, for me.
Yeah. I've often I like the idea of Drift Week over in the US.
How do they do it?
I don't it's essentially it's almost like Drag Week, right? You have these cars that you drive from track to track, but they spend I think it's actually a little over a week. Mm-hmm. And you spend a day at a track, rip up the track for the day, and then drive to the next one.
That's pretty cool.
So,
I guess it's the same kind of concept. The only difference is all their tracks are in the same venue,
same area. Yeah. So you don't you just drive from one track to the next, and it's not that far. Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know. I feel like there's probably, as far as seat time, that's where you get it.
Yeah, it made a massive difference, especially on the first trip, knowing that I'd missed a lot of fundamentals and it was kind of affecting my driving in the fact that I didn't have some of those basics and I was j- just messy. So they've got a skid pan there and no one was on it. So they've got a couple of cones there. You just set up some different configurations and you go for goal all day.
Yep.
So by the end of that, I was just going in and out of cones, doing some different layouts, just getting really comfortable, especially with the handbrake, because I was never that good with the handbrake. I didn't rely on it at all. I would basically just clutch kick everywhere. And now I'm kind of the opposite. I would probably rely too much on the handbrake. But yeah, it just being really focusing on putting the car where I want it rather than letting the car take me. So I spent a good amount of time on the skid pan there, which made a massive difference for me. Even though I felt like it was a bit delayed, it was a few years after I'd already started driving. But we're all on different journeys. It's just where mine took me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. Everyone is on their own journey. And you know, like skid pans, I guess, are a bit of a blessing, especially here in Sydney. You know, like it's so easy to get onto the skid pan. So I feel like it's a bit of a blessing in that aspect.
Yeah.
But
I liked the idea of no one else was there and I could just go for gold. I can be very anxious as a driver naturally, worried that someone right behind me, do they know what they're doing? Will they pull up in time? I get a little bit skeptical of other people. So it was just nice to have that space to myself where I didn't have to think about that. Yeah. I could just concentrate on what I had to. And plus I've always been one of those people where I don't want to hold other people up either. I don't want to be that girl that's holding, everyone up. But yeah, it's good to have that time to really zone in on some stuff.
So is that something that's is that more of a you thing, or is that something that you've felt pressure with as far as, not wanting to be the one in the way?
I think it's more just a personality trait for me. Like I like to keep things smooth. Like I'm not a confrontational person. I'm not a judgmental person. I just like to be like just cruise it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily a people person either. So just other people in my space is is generally enough for me to be like, oh, get the fuck out of here. So, when you're sharing zones with other people and other drivers and things, you've kind of got to let down some walls that are naturally there.
Yeah. You are speaking my language. I'm much the same.
Yeah, I just different people are doing, like some people just, they could get up on anyone's door and they don't care. I'm not that way inclined. I need to know you and what you're about.
Yeah. As far as tracks that you've been to, where have you been? Obviously, you've been to Ebisu in Japan.
Yeah, honestly, not that much here. Like Wakefield I've been to. I have done Marulan, but it was before they allowed drift, so it was only a grip day many years ago and before they did all the works that they did there. And driving-wise, that is pretty much it in Australia other than Sydney Motorsport Park. So those three, I guess, are Sydney tracks, but I haven't been interstate. Oh, no, sorry, Winton. Winton is the other one. When I did the high-tech round, I drove Winton, which was a very unsuccessful weekend, very expensive weekend. But, yeah, they're the tracks that I've driven.
Awesome. Out of those tracks, what's your favourite?
I really like the GP circuit at Sydney Motorsport Park. I know some people all over South Circuit, they love it, and I get it, but I just prefer for the GP.
Yep.
Is
there a track you want to get to, you want to drive at?
I want to get to South Australia. I want to get over and drive with the girls. Like we've known each other a few years now. We've met at World Time Attack. We've supported each other for years, and I just would absolutely love to get over there and drive with them. Yeah. Even though we used to have a few girls here, I'd say, well, there's more girls coming through, but when I was driving, there was only a very small handful of us and most have gone off to do other ventures or had families and things like that. So I'd say that having that female community being so far away kind of sucks. and we've got some other like girl drivers that I would love to drive with as well, like Lucy, up Queensland way. it would just be awesome if everybody could just get together. That'd be sick. Because I know the girls are doing their own day in September, but unfortunately for me, it falls on the weekend of World Time Attack, which has other implications.
Same. I wanted to get. I was actually going to try and get down to catch up with them there.
And, yeah.
When Bonnie told me the date, I'm like, that doesn't work.
Like I feel like it still would have been very difficult for me this year, but having the date that it is, it just really set in concrete. I can't make it. But I'm definitely down to try and pull some strings for the next one.
Absolutely. Speaking of World Time Attack, we've been chatting and you've been able to convince somebody that it's a good idea to take school kids to World Time Attack. Is that right?
Yes, I have.
That's so cool.
In the years gone by, they've had some excursions called Students on Track, which is like the Telstra 500 and things like that. And I've taken the kids. I love being in and amongst motorsport of whatever kind, but to be able to show the kids World Time Attack, which to me is like the pinnacle of what we love. So it's awesome. And because this year our school events didn't tie in with the dates for the Students on Track, I said, listen, there is this other event that I think some of these kids would absolutely adore. They would fall in love with motorsport and I would love to take them. And I finally got the okay to take a very small and select group.
Very small, select group. That's good.
Yeah. So I actually was doing it today. I've got to get the kids to do like an expression of interest of why they should be chosen. It's aimed at just our U6 kids. And I've got some boys, especially at school. Miss, you still got the drift car? They're still like they love it. They still that come up and ask me, oh, what do you think of this car? Or my uncle's got this, and so they would fall in love with this. I really feel like it, and they're the next generation. There's, you know, if you want to keep motorsport going, like we keep complaining about things being banned and things getting into a bit of a nanny state. If you want it to survive, you got to key up the next lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of these kids might be the person who takes the chair of like the ARDC, for example, or something like that, where all of a sudden they love drifting and now it's a much bigger thing purely because one person likes it.
That's it. I feel like where I'm based, there's a lot of kids that are from disadvantaged homes and they would not have access to this normally. So to be able to take them, they would never know it existed. So it's awesome to see them. I've even just taken them in the past to the Students on Track excursion. They light up. They haven't seen things like they haven't seen the cars fly past like they do, or the sounds and the sights and the smoke, and it's overwhelming.
That's really cool. I wish I had a teacher that cool when I was in school.
I feel like there's not. This might sound a little bit self-deprecating, but I feel like that's what I can help these kids with. Even though I help kids on a day-to-day basis with their literacy, their numeracy, but this is something I feel like can inspire some kids to, you know, to look outside the classroom and see all the different things on offer. And motorsport to me is a fucking good one. So there's only one way to show them.
Yep. I can promise you that if I was shown at a younger age that there could be careers in motorsport, I would not be where I am now.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I feel like even myself, if I had some different opportunities and being shown some different things, I would be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Not to say that I regret the choices that I've made, but I feel like I may have been led in a different path altogether.
Yeah.
But even just a few years back with some of my U6 kids, I did a drag racing unit and they had to do they had to learn about cam scrutineering, and they had to build their own little car out of household materials, and then we had a tournament and they lapped it up. They loved it. Even like the girls, they all loved it. It was just such a engrossed experience for them.
That's awesome.
And that kind of shit where you're like, this is where it's at.
That's awesome. So I guess being a teacher, and you were saying earlier you swear like a sailor, how is that switch? Yeah, is that an easy switch to flip?
I think because I've done it for so long, it is. I think there may have been some slip-ups over the years, which I've covered nicely. It's definitely, I think as well, being around workshops, being around motorsport, it's not so much an offensive thing. It's just part of your vernacular. Like it's just yeah. how it is.
Yeah.
I think you definitely, I guess subconsciously flip a switch.
Yeah.
And put on the.
I have that switch myself, and it's the second I walk through the door at home.
Yeah.
It's just switch.
See, I've got to remember to keep that switch on with a toddler. He's starting to pick up on this stuff. I really, really have to crack down on it now. Yeah.
Now, my wife and I have always held our tongue around our children, and we're always shocked. We're so shocked when we hear people swearing around kids. Like that's how tight we've kept it, which is good. But even like so much as I think my daughter might have been 10 the first time she heard fuck, and it's like someone hit her. You know what I mean? Like she sort of kind of cringed from it, and she didn't just. Doesn't like swear words.
See, I think for me as well with swearing, I don't know, when it just becomes a part of your vocab, you don't really flinch at it anymore kind of thing. I'd probably drop a lot more C words than what I ever used to just because I feel like it's got the more oomph that I didn't have in the other words. So
so I'm never allowed to use that one. The wife hates it. So
I remember my mum used to hate it. But for some reason, it rolls off my tongue quite easily.
It's too easy.
Yeah.
All day at work, it'll come out. But as soon as I get home, that switch flips.
Yeah. I've got to try and be probably a bit more ladylike as well, which is another thing.
You don't need that. I guess you've been brought into high tech to judge.
Yep.
What's that been like for you?
It's a learning curve for me. So I've never once, I guess, been on the judging side. I've never really thought about it, to be honest. I've always been a driver on the driver's side, on the grassroots side of things, really. And when I was approached to do it, they really wanted to have a female perspective and they wanted to start building the female presence in the drift community and not necessarily just as drivers. They, you know, want to get more people involved in track events and changing, especially it's the whole empowering movement and whatnot. So they were destined or really wanted to have a female on board, and I was one of the candidates thrown in. I had to actually think about it for a couple of days because I didn't know if I was well suited enough and well equipped, I guess, for the challenge. Like I've watched many comps over the years, and obviously you have your own two cents over who you think should have won or what, you know, happened there, but you've never had to necessarily justify it. You've never had to put a numerical value to something. So that side of it is, I guess, what I'm still learning, but I guess I feel a little bit more comfortable now than what I did in the first round. So I'm starting to find a little bit of a rhythm, even though people that have been judging for years can still be thrown out of rhythm. So everything that's presented to you is so different. There's no guarantee. Like even some people, they're smashing it in practice, and then practice comes and there's no follow through. You just go, what's happened? So there's no promises. And you're judged basically on what you present. So I don't care who you are, where you're from, just show me what you can do at this point in time.
Yep.
And I guess too, coming from a teaching background, when you're marking things, you have very specific criteria that you have to follow. So I wanted to get as familiar as I could very quickly about what the criteria were and different examples of those criteria. So even for example, in teaching, when you have your criteria, you'll have your best sample of work and you'll have a lower end sample of work. And then you've got to judge between that and get your consistency. So I guess the best piece of advice that I got with that was it doesn't necessarily matter too much like how you break it down as long as you're doing it consistently. So however you're looking at it, you're looking at it in a consistent way for everybody, which for me, I need consistency to work anyway. So that works for me.
Unreal. So what's it like, I guess, going into that, coming from the driver's perspective?
It's definitely very different. I feel like not that I'm easily impressed, but I guess, again, as well, I like to look at the positives of things, not necessarily the stuff-ups. So I've really got to look at the critiquing side of things to differentiate between the drivers. And I'm more of a person of, oh, no, that was pretty sick. Ned, I don't, you know, they might have stuffed up there, but that looks sick. But you can't look at it that way. You've really got to, especially in qualifying, when you're nitpicking at every little thing, because you're deducting points, you're not giving points. It's definitely, I've had to think about it a lot more in depth than probably what I ever have.
Yeah, right.
And just seeing everything so quickly, it happens so fast. You need to get your points down so fast. And for me, I try and write little notes on the side to back up the scores that I've given, because people want feedback. And my memory's like, what? I've watched how many laps this day, and I don't even remember what I've done in the last 10 minutes. So I really try and write down notes for myself as quickly as I can, just so I've got that to jog my memory again later.
Yeah.
Which was a really good piece of advice I got from EG, who's done some judging around. That was one of his little traits that he does, and I thought, yep, I can work with that.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess now that you've judged, is it three rounds now? Four?
Three. Yep.
Has that changed your perspective as a driver now? Like, so if you were to get back in the car and jump into a comp, has that kind of changed what you, or the way you drive?
I feel like, I don't know for sure yet, but I feel like it will. Definitely placement of the car on the track, being more mindful of where I'm putting the car, or just the thing is how things look from the outside feel very different on the inside. So even though watching these guys and then you watch some of their in-car and you're just like, oh, okay, it's, even though we're all watching the same thing, we're all doing the same thing, it's interpreted so differently. But I feel like I'm hoping it will improve my driving. It's only one way to know.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. Have you had any big protests?
There's been, I'd say, less than a handful of protests. Some of them were, or not some of them, one was based on a mechanical issue. And the thing is, even though there were protests, it was still following the regulations. So it still was upheld because this is how it works. And regardless of how you feel about that regulation, that's what it is. So we can't just pick and choose which regulations we're going to apply. And I guess at the last round, there were some in the finals footage we didn't see, so which created a bit of a stir, which we didn't even know about until after the presentation, unfortunately, just because of technical errors. So there was parts of the track we couldn't see, and because it wasn't in a judge zone, we just made the most of it kind of thing. We thought we can see the judge zones, we'll go from there, and we judged on what was presented in the judge zones. And because there were some issues at the start line, we didn't know about it, which was a bit of an issue. But hopefully you just take those things, you learn from it. Hopefully by the next round there won't be anything like that and we can get the technical monitors and everything sorted, because there were times where we didn't have replayability either, so we just had to go off what we saw and just hope that that was good enough. I know people expect you to see everything, but it's just not possible at all times.
That's right.
Happens. So we try to be as pedantic as possible, but yeah, sometimes you do miss things. Like had no idea that there was an issue at the start line. It wasn't communicated to us over radio. So just happened, I guess.
Yeah.
But hopefully for future rounds, we can avoid things like that happening.
Yep. So I guess when something like that does happen, and maybe a wrong call's been made, maybe it hasn't, is that something that kind of that will sort of eat at you? Do you take that home with you, sort of thing?
For me personally, if it's something that I'm personally responsible for, then yeah, it probably will. I feel like in that particular scenario, it didn't necessarily go home with me because I feel like we upheld everything that we could have possibly done. There was nothing we knew to change. We didn't intentionally make a call knowing what had happened. It was just we weren't notified till well after the presentation. So it wasn't, I felt like we had no control. There was nothing at that point that we knew that could have changed that outcome. So I guess you're trying to be as fair as you can. And I know some people say that judging is essentially a thankless role. But you are trying to not necessarily appease everybody, but you're just trying to be fair and consistent across the board. And not everyone's going to see your point of view. That's just life. Not everyone sits in that seat and sees exactly what we see. Not everybody else hears the conversations that we've got going back and forth between us. We don't always agree, and that's I guess the problem of it being a judge sport. I know many different comps try and I guess streamline it as much as they can, but ultimately it's judged. So we just work together as best we can to make it fair. So obviously some things are obvious and some things you really got to pick apart.
Yep.
And especially for me being new to the role, I'm taking it in as well as trying to apply what I know. So
yep.
It's a thin line.
Absolutely. And I guess I've sort of been exposed a bit to that side of things as well. And I know that, yeah, a lot of people don't realise that sometimes replays don't work.
You know, yeah.
Sometimes it wasn't captured. So you've only got literally what you saw with your own eyes and notes that you've made, if you've been quick enough to get them.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes just technology fails.
Yep.
And unfortunately, that's probably when the bigger issues are going to occur, when you can't watch it. You know, like not everybody's got that FD budget where you can watch the run from 30 different angles.
Yeah. So, and even then they want decisions quick. Like as much as you're trying to be as thorough as you can, you know, there's this timeline, they're streaming on, you know, on TV and whatnot. Like there's certain expectations that are outside of the driving that you're trying to adhere to everything. So there's a lot of pressures from different points. And I know that that's the way it is, but we're still human at the end of the day. Like everyone's trying their best.
Yep, absolutely. We'll jump into some random hypothetical questions. like have some fun with this. If you had a whole day to do anything you wanted, what would you do?
Depends on my mood, really. I love the beach, but I also love the track. So depending on how I'm feeling that day, I would say probably just stuff around at the beach or just drive all day.
Nice. If your life was made into a movie, which actor or actress would you want to play you?
Oh, shit. Margot Robbie?
Good choice.
Can that be wishful thinking?
Good choice. If you could travel anywhere, where would you go?
I would like to go back to Japan, but I have been there a couple of times. I want to get to the States. I've just always had a thing to get there. I don't know. There's nothing in Disneyland, obviously, is one of them. I'm not going to lie. But, yeah, just to see some drifting over there as well would be great. Seems a whole different scale of things there I would like to see.
So Driftwood could be a good one.
Yeah, one day.
If you weren't in your current profession, we kind of almost touched on this a bit earlier, what would you be doing? What would you want to be doing, I should say?
What would I want to be doing? Can I be a lady of leisure? Is that an occupation? Or
it can be. I'm just not sure how we get there, is it?
No, not a madam. I mean, just like some rich lady at home. but if I had to pick another career, I would say I'd like it to be in motorsport. I know it's a bit of a thin line because you can love it more as a hobby. You wouldn't want to become desensitized to it and then eventually resent it. But I feel like that's where I'm comfortable. It's where I feel like is a bit of a home for me.
Yeah. I've never heard it like put like that. That's where I'm comfortable. I like that.
Yeah. It's a very easing feeling when I'm at the track.
Yep. What is one thing you would do to somebody to mildly inconvenience their day-to-day life? This is where we get to find out how troublesome you are.
What was that? They spend the day with me. I'm sure they'll be mildly irritated all day. I don't know. Again, I think it depends on the person over what irritates them. I can be easily irritated. I don't know, take their left shoe. I think that's an old one.
Still good though. leave it outside in the rain or something. Questions from past guests.
Okay.
We have Bonnie and Bryony from the Glitter Gang. If you're teaching your partner to drift, what would be your biggest fear? So I guess in this instance, we're teaching someone who has no idea how to drift.
I'd say if they start to outdrift you, it'd be disappointing. Which I'm sure happens regularly, but I'm just, you still want to be the sensei at the end of the day, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. From Cam Martin, if you could have any drift car from the 70s and 80s, what would it be? So we'll get one from each decade, one from the 70s. If you could, build a drift car from the 70s, what would it be?
Oh, shit. I don't know. My caliber of cars is from 90s up. I don't know what to do there.
You kind of get a reprieve with the 80s because I think 89 was the
R32? Yeah. Was it 89 to 90?
Real late 89, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez. No, that's one I'd have to research, legit. My caliber of cars is 90s.
No, what do you got for 80s then?
80s. I'd probably have to say maybe a 31 or a 32, like if I had to roll with one, I guess. Just wouldn't be my preference.
Yeah. Oh, what's the preference?
Preference is the Silvias, any or. So we'll stick to the 90s.
Kurt Blackie, did you ever play Need for Speed Underground? I feel like this is just a giveaway at this point. Did you ever play Need for Speed Underground on a PS2?
Nope.
What?
I have never been into gaming in any way, shape or form.
No, really?
Even when simulators became a big thing, I tried a couple of friends. I actually get really bad motion sickness. There's just something there that makes me really nauseous, even if it's not a VR, like it just any kind of thing just, yeah. I don't actually even watch a lot of TV in general. So right. I don't know if it's a my eyesight thing, but like we had Ataris and stuff as kids, but even then I wasn't that, like I'd buddy up with my brothers and stuff, but just was not my thing.
Wow, that's the first.
Yep.
The first. I didn't think we'd find anyone that hasn't played it. Unreal.
Yeah, not me.
Unreal. You missed out.
Yeah, probably not though, because knowing my skill level for that kind of thing, it wouldn't have been that impressive.
Still would have been fun. coming from Guy Maxwell, what would be your favourite racetrack to go and see or drive around? Anywhere in the world.
Drive around. I really, there's a few of the people in the States. What's it called? Villain Sportsland? Looked like fun.
Oh, okay.
Just a little track that looked like they had a lot of fun on. like it does look like a bit of a second gear scenario. I could be wrong, but and a lot of people talk about Port Mac, so I never got up there. That seems like it would be a fun little one to give a go.
Awesome. Kristen from Jordan Bennett, best advice for someone wanting to create a car?
Know what you want and know your own vision. I guess everybody has their two cents about what you should do and how you should do it, but at the end of the day, it's yours. Do what you want.
Perfect. Jack Martin. Now, this one is, it's like a eight-part question-ish.
Eight.
So bear with me. What's your favourite sounding engine per cylinder? So I guess this will kind of play on your engine knowledge. So what he means by per cylinder is like, so I guess we'll start at four cylinder and work up. So we'll go like four cylinder, five cylinder, if you know any, six, eight, 10, 12. Yeah, that's why it's an eight part.
I know people fucking hate SRs, but to me they're such a comforting sound. So I don't like they're mine, and obviously 2J are like just wicked to hear. But
so if we got four and six covered. You've got the SR and the 2J. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll go eight. That was the face of I don't care.
Yeah, I just. The thing is, I know what I like, and then anything outside of that just doesn't pique me. Like it just. The thing is, if I can hear something and go, "Fuck, I like the sound of that," will I know what it is? Probably not.
Is no the worries. Other. So we find that out in the future when you actually hear it and go, "I like that."
Yeah, I'll go, hey, that one, yeah. That one. Write it down.
Awesome. So we can skip the 10 cylinders, 12 cylinders.
Yeah.
You know, in all honesty, I couldn't give you a 12-cylinder I like the sound of. I wouldn't know. I don't know what cars have them.
Yeah, I have to surrender for this one.
Awesome. Coming from Brendan Carroll, skateboarding or BMX?
Look, I tried skateboarding once growing up. Didn't end well. So I'd say BMX if I had to pick. Can't say I ever really was into either. my brothers and I were more into motocross bikes growing up. So
there we go.
Yeah.
There's the tie back. It's funny because most drifters I've spoken to, BMX.
Yeah.
If not, dirt bikes.
Yeah. And I think it was dirt bikes.
And then a small percentage skateboarding.
Yeah, no. Skateboarding, definitely I don't have the coordination for that. Definitely not.
Your turn. Give us a question for future guests.
I would guess it would say, I don't know if you said it already, but who inspired you to get into drifting? Drifting specifically, like was there a car or a specific person that I guess encompassed of what you thought drifting would be?
Yep. Awesome. So. I like that. We'll wrap up.
No,
have you been given any words of wisdom that stick with you today?
I've been given many, many words of advice, but I would say, just enjoy the ride. You don't know where you're going to be. You don't know where life's going to take you. Honestly, it throws me some curveballs quite consistently. So I guess it's just I need to take my own advice, but don't overthink too much at the end of the day. And I got to take more joy in the little things. So I guess that's some advice I've been given over the years is to look at the good things rather than focusing on what can go wrong.
Absolutely. Is there anyone you'd like to acknowledge or thank?
Honestly, in the whole drifting side of things, Adam, of course, has been and still continues to be a very good support system for me. EG is another one who is just, he's my go-to for a lot of things, especially when we went to Japan. We could not have survived without EG. And as well as that goes for the Team Red Stage boys in total. And also for High Tech for having me on board this year. Glenny for trying to make the transition into judging very smooth for me. He's done a brilliant job. I feel like he works above and beyond in his capacity. And just everyone that I've met over the years with drifting are a great bunch of people. Even though I've been away from the track for a little while, getting back to the track, seeing those old faces, nothing changes. You still are a part of that community, regardless how long you step away for. I know the drifting community cops a lot of flack, but there is a core group or a core community, I would say, that just loves being there and loves to have other people who also love being there.
I can honestly say, after being part of or at least being able to see into a bit of a fair selection of communities, it's probably the tightest knit community.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there are little offshoots that tend to go a little bit rogue, it seems. But at the end of the day, I feel like everybody has the same, not necessarily goals for drifting because people want to do different things, but the importance of it to them is still great,
yeah,
in whatever capacity that is. So yeah, and everybody just wants to have a good fucking time, and that's like, that doesn't change.
Yep.
So yeah, I'd say just for all the drifters over the years, they're good peeps.
Awesome. Let everybody know where they can find you.
Don't find me, but I don't really Facebook or anything that often. I guess Instagram is my go-to, where I'm usually just tinkering in the garage or doing pole and trying not to swear in the garage and things like that. So Burnsy Drifts is where I am.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's been fun.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you tune in again next week. Don't forget to head over and follow Gutter to Gutter on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok by searching for Gutter to Gutter Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/Gutter to Gutter Podcast, and be sure to check out a new website at guttertogutterpodcast.com. I'd really appreciate it if you could share the podcast with a friend and even consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. I look forward to bringing you more next week, so please have a great week and look after each other.